Daylight came late and weakly. The raft was driven ahead of sleet-laden wind over tossing waves that had long since relieved Gellin of everything in his stomach. He didn't want to use his headlamp to find the medkit. It might be seen from the base. So in the dingy gray light, with Bakarian's grisly stiff corpse rolling into him with every lurch of the waves, he finally spotted the medkit on the raft's bulwark and edged over to it. He peeled back the glove of his PPU, opened the medkit, and found the anti-nausea patches. In a few minutes, he felt slightly better and very hungry. First, though, he used the raft's suction pump to clear blood-stained water from the raft's interior and dared to peek out the canopy. Nothing but tossing waves dimpled by sleet, receding into murky dimness. At least they were out of sight of Three Stack. He resealed the canopy and explored the rest of the raft interior. It had been designed to hold 8 crash survivors. Tucked into one compartment was a manual, the same one, he realized, which he had read so carelessly that other time. On the first page, he saw a diagram of the raft, clearly marking the location of, among other things, the water purifier, the direction finder, the food stores, and the repair kit. Lieutenant Commander Vinet waited none too patiently for the signal he expected. Today or tomorrow, Bakarian had said, depending on weather. It had to be cloudy, so that nothing would show on a satellite scan if the scan hadn't been disabled. It had to be daylight enough that her men could be sure Meharry was safely drowned. With the storm moving in, surely it had been cloudy on Three Stack. It had been cloudy here since before dawn, and as evening closed in, an icy mix of sleet and snow pelted windows. He ate dinner as quickly as possible. If only he could contact her. But she had forbidden it, and he knew her to be a ruthless critic of those who disobeyed. Something had caused a delay.
Tomorrow, then.
Morning brought the height of the gale. The waves below, beaten down by wind, scraped by sleet into patterns that looked as dangerous as they were. Through triple-insulated windows, he felt the power of that gale, the chill of the wind. By noon, he was unbearably restless again, pacing from desk to window and back, then down to the passage to the little enclosed overlook that gave him a clear view of the entire west end of the stack and across to several others. No more sleet and snow now, nothing but the cold wind. The two trees in the courtyard below flailed bare limbs against the wall that protected them. Towards evening, the storms slid off to the south, and cold green light speared under the trailing edge. Still nothing. Something had gone very wrong indeed.
What now?
Vinet couldn't contact any of the others. Bakarian controlled the recognition codes. He couldn't do anything with the research teams or the weapons without additional forces. Bakarian knew he had only a few reliable men. She knew that, and still, he made himself sit down again, but nothing could quiet his mind. Gellin had lashed the commander's corpse to the far side of the raft, repaired the slashes he'd accidentally put in the inner hull, eaten, and slept again. The storm had eased, but he had no idea where he was in relation to the stacks. Fear of being blown back to them warred with fear of drifting on the vast ocean until he died.
Death either way. Which is worse?
Surely the commander's conspiracy, whatever it was, didn't include everyone on the planet. He ought to be able to count on the people at search and rescue, if no one else. He looked at Bakarian's corpse and shuddered. He could not bring himself to look for papers or whatever else she might have had. Well, then he could write his account of what happened. The survival manual had a thick pad of water-resistant sheets and a waterproof marker. Gellin hadn't written anything by hand in years, but he decided to put down what had happened before he unlocked the beacon. That way, even if he died, there'd be some record of events from his point of view.
If someone doesn't just destroy them.
No use thinking like that. He set the pad on his knee and tried to form legible writing as the waves lifted and dropped. It was harder than he'd expected, and after 3 sheets, he gave up. Sergeant Copans looked worried.
Commander Bakarian's not in her offices, sir. The commander's not answering any call, and the locator's not lit.
If it's not one thing, it's another.
CPO Slyke didn't need this. Corporal Meharry's carefully staged suicide had gone exactly as planned, along with the murder of Major Dumlin, the senior unaligned officer. But Bakarian should have been there, unless she was playing some game of her own. And even then, she should have been back by now. Her games were usually short ones. CPO Slyke had been a member of the Loyal Order of Game Hunters for 16 years, the first enlisted recruit. He had served with then-Major Lupescu and admired the officer's grasp of the real nature of war, a test of survival, of ultimate fitness. Born and raised on Caladon by priorists who believed that fitness in this life was determined by effort in the life previous, Slyke knew he had earned his superior skills and toughness. Now, facing the implications of Bakarian's disappearance, he knew his moment had come. Although he had not been briefed on the whole mission, his part had required him to know more than any other NCO and most officers. He would, take over. They had been lucky. Severe weather cut off communication immediately after the commander's disappearance, giving him time to do what he could to obscure the evidence and search the buildings. The underground storage and lava tubes were an obvious target. He insisted on leading the search party himself with his most trusted companions, all full members. The commander had left tagtails. Very sensible of her.
What did she know about that I didn't? And what didn't she tell me?
Slyke pushed that thought aside as he squeezed into the second tube. The searchlights picked up the glint off the hunting rifle's barrel first. Then he saw the little red dot on the far wall. The laser sight was still on, the power pack unexpended. The sea filled the tube with a wash of cold, wet air. The walls glistened with it. Closer, and he realized that some of the glistening surface was blood, not seawater. Smears and pools of blood, a few shreds of flesh. And something had been dragged, something heavy, from here to the edge of the tube to the sea, where a crumpled, wet tarp lay, its edge flapping with every gust of wind.
Ah!
That damnable, conniving, fornicating Corporal Meharry must have survived the fall, climbed here, hoping for refuge. No, to retrieve a life raft he'd stowed here. And the commander had figured it out, had been waiting for him. Only in the struggle, one of them had killed the other. Such a lot of blood, and he was a man who could estimate spilled blood accurately. And escaped in the raft.
But which?
Logic said Meharry. Bakarian would have come back. Unless that was part of her plot, unless she had planned to betray them all and escape herself. She had, after all, come down here without telling anyone. Perhaps she had counted on Meharry's death, and the life raft was for her own use. Slyke chewed his lip, trying to figure it out, and finally decided it didn't matter. They were in it up to their necks, and a witness, which witness didn't matter, had escaped. He would have to go on with it. If they could get off planet before the person in the life raft made contact with anyone, the plan could go as originally formed. He ran his thumb under his belt, along the strips of ears that he had taken. They were, he was sure, only the beginning. Within the prison population, tension had risen in the past few days. Prisoners studied jailers in both their roles, as the predators they had been, and were in spirit, watch prey, and as the prey watch predators around them. Slyke knew exactly which prisoners were supposed to be released, but his own assessment suggested a few additions. First, he had to find a way to contact the conspirators in orbit and convince them of his identity.